Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Sonia.
My name is Willie Simpson. And today, Sonia, we are discussing the 15th episode of Season 3, the 41st episode overall, The Dark Phoenix Saga, Part 3, The Dark Phoenix. So if you can guess by that title, you know we're talking about The Dark Phoenix and The Dark Phoenix Saga.
Oh, good. We have a topic for today.
Yes, we do. So this episode picks up right where we left off last week, where the Dark Phoenix has freed herself from the clutches of the Hellfire Club, who were manipulating her mind, making her think she was in some bizarre 18th century, like, romantic boat novel or something.
Good old boat
novels. One of those books with Fabio on the cover.
Uh-huh.
And she's broken free of their control. The X-Men took care of the Hellfire Club. She has donned herself in her dark red Dark Phoenix outfit, sort of set herself ablaze, and is cackling to the winds about how she's super powerful and going to destroy everything.
Mm-hmm.
So our poor friend Jean Grey is hopelessly lost, or shall we say intoxicated by all this new power surging through her.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a cool like setup because we're still outside the mansion of the Hellfire Club, which looks adjacent to somewhere in Central Park, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the X-Men, they're, you know, still sweaty from fighting the Hellfire Club. Now they have to deal with Jean. And Jean sort of, like, blasts them off the roof of this mansion towards the park. And the X-Men have to do one of their classic, like, we're all falling from the sky, someone has to rescue us thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Wolverine luckily heads towards some ducks.
I like that he falls into the pond, and as he's falling in, he goes, ducks, and then he lands, and it just rings of that previous episode where he's like in the kitchen of the Hellfire Club mansion.
Uh-huh.
And he passes by like the chef's like had made some big meal, and he just looks at it and goes, turkey.
Yeah.
Like, just one foul line.
But then he lets us know a few seconds later that he hates ducks.
Yeah.
Well, Storm can fly.
Key character development.
Yeah, that's right. Storm can fly, so she's fine. And then Rogue manages to catch Gambit in the sky.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happens to Beast and Cyclops. I wasn't fully paying attention to that second. But it's funny.
Storm catches all of them.
Oh, Storm catches a Beast and Cyclops.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, whatever. But Gambit has a funny line when Rogue catches him. He's like, see, you rescued me over Wolverine share. It must mean you like me or something.
Yeah, she's like, don't flatter yourself or something
and
like that.
And throws him into the pond with Wolverine.
Cute opening. I like it.
Yep. And so the Dark Phoenix is, like we said, she's cackling and sort of reveling in her power. And she's like, I'm going to destroy you all, X-Men. And the X-Men, they take this threat very seriously. They start attacking the Dark Phoenix. And Storm's like, all right, here's a hurricane in your face.
Yeah, to so, no effect.
Right. So she calls upon the power of the hurricane, which I'm not sure if we've seen her really do just yet. We've seen her like cause a flood in the Slave Island episode.
I want to say yes, we have seen it before, or like something very similar. I don't know.
Close, but like a hurricane's a big deal.
I think this is like a nice theme in this episode, though, is that we see a lot of the X-Men really using their powers to the full extent.
Yeah, they're really letting loose on Jean, but it's not doing anything.
Right.
So, and then after the hurricane doesn't work, Storm tries her lightning. She does like a tremendous zap of lightning right in Jean's face. It does nothing. Cyclops tries shooting her. Rogue tries throwing a tree at Jean, but Jean turns it into a hunk of solid gold, which is funny, and also that's taken directly from the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like really a really fantastic thing that comics can do sometimes.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to see an entire elm tree turn into glittering
solid gold.
Yeah, glittering solid gold.
Yeah. That's actually a funny one because I didn't realize that Storm wouldn't be strong enough to hold that up. Like, it weighs her down.
Rogue, you mean.
I mean, sorry, yeah, Rogue.
Right, yeah. Rogue gets kind of... Well, maybe she's taken by surprise.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, a tree made of solid gold has got to be heavy.
I'm sure, but...
And it's funny, in the comics, Beast or, like, Colossus says something like, oh, this will certainly solve the city's, like, debt crisis. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Which, you know, around the time...
We missed that here.
Right, yeah, they didn't really say anything here. But, like, I think around the time this comic was published, New York was... just getting out of their own, like, massive financial disaster.
Right.
So, how nice that they now, the Parks Department controls a tree of solid gold. Hopefully they can put it to good use. And then, like, some other, like, fun, interesting actions happening. This episode's really cool. Like, there's actually a lot of great animation, mm-hmm. a lot of great, like new poses we see our characters in. For instance, like, Jean, like, reverses Gambit's power back on himself and gets his jacket to explode. Mm-hmm. And so he has to hop out of his jacket, and you get to see Gambit outside of his trench coat in a rare shot, mm-hmm. where you get to see his, like, yoga, like, outfit.
His unitard.
Yeah, in his body armor.
Uh-huh.
And then Rogue even tries to absorb her power with her bare hands, and that doesn't work. So, you know, when all else fails, Cyclops pulls the love card out.
Yeah.
He's like, I love you, Jean. And, you know, nothing can stop that. And it temporarily stops Jean. She's like, what? She's like, love? I don't understand. And, you know, it's not enough. Like, she sort of knocks Cyclops over. And then we see him without his visor again, which is always kind of cool to see as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Jean is quite, like, confused by this, so, like, this sort of action by Cyclops has sort of forced her to fly off the planet temporarily. I guess when you're a cosmic force of nearly unlimited power, when someone throws the love card in your face, you just need to, like, fly to another solar system to yep. get your bearings.
You gotta run away.
Right, so that's what she does. and in that moment, we get some awesome Marvel cameos.
Yeah.
First, we see the Hellfire Club on the street outside their mansion. They haven't really run away yet, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
We see Shaw and maybe a few others, like, witnessing all this, maybe realizing that we were messing with powers beyond our control. But more interestingly, we see our old pal Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
He gets sort of a psychic alert. We see Thor
yep.
on the rooftop of some building in New York City.
He gets a psychic alert.
Yeah, but he doesn't do anything. I mean, Thor, mm-hmm. we could use you. You're the god of lightning.
Yeah.
And then we see Uatu, the Watcher,
mm-hmm.
who's the famous sort of, like, ancient alien guy in the Marvel Universe who, like, witnesses every... He's from a race of beings that witness all events in the universe and records them all for posterity.
Mm-hmm.
And we most recently saw him in the MCU. I believe he was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Uatu appears. And that was kind of an interesting scene because Uatu's like a character that you could say he's from the Marvel Universe or from the Fantastic Four Marvel Universe that's controlled by Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So people were wondering when they saw Uatu in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 if that meant that if there was some, like, ice thawing between the corporate entities.
Mm.
And now it turns out there might have been.
But or it was just boundary pushing.
It was
just
boundary, yeah. It was likely that. It's like there's some characters that ride the line, yeah. much like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Right.
For some reason, Marvel was able to use them for Avengers,
mm-hmm.
Even though they're mutants. Oh, and then we get one last cameo, a really, like, deep cut out of left field one. We see in the foreground of the cosmos is Eternity, who's one of these, like, amazing cosmic entities. So it's, like, it's cool when you see characters like Eternity. It's like you're looking at outer space, but then they kind of, like, they're part of the fabric of space-time. And that makes sense for this guy, Eternity, because he is the embodiment of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of these, like, fundamental forces in the Marvel Universe. And I really like that's cool that in the Marvel world they personify these, like, great powers as actual beings. Like, you know, death is personified as a character.
Yeah, it's like time. That same, like, thing that we've talked about, how, right. like, the Marvel Universe really manages to capture, like, the greatest, some of the greatest concepts in science fiction.
Right.
And, like,
they turn
beautify them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's like as if you climbed to the 99th power level and you could peer into the secrets of the galaxy. Like, that's what Marvel gives its fans with, like, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's like this really cool, like, how far can we push the mythology of the universe kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and in a sense, like, they're creating, like, their own new mythology. Because, you know, in human world, we have our ancient mythologies with the gods and, you know, even things like Thor and the religions and things, but like Marvel is cool because it's like, hey, we'll create our own mythologies with like new scientific age concepts.
Yeah, draw some from the old, put in some of the new, right. And like bind it all together. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I love that stuff. And it's like, you know, I didn't recognize Eternity at first. I knew him as a cosmic being, so we had to pause the episode to look him up. Mm-hmm. But then, like, I came across some articles like, these are the most 15 powerful like beings in the Marvel universe. And you know, you see like crazy stuff on there, like the Beyonder and the mm-hmm. Living Tribunal, and there's like the ultimate god is, I think it's like this thing called the One Above All, which is essentially the god of the Marvel Universe, which is personified as Jack Kirby and Stan Lee.
Right.
And, like, that might sound silly at first to say that, but, like, that character's actually appeared in the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the Fantastic Four meet them at one point, or meet this character. He, even though it's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby together as one, I think it's always portrayed as Jack Kirby, which makes the most sense, because he drew
he's
them
the
all.
Actual, yeah, he's the actual artist.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, like Men in Black,
yeah,
meta idea.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. That's just like such a great concept. I mean, like they Grant Morrison played with that too in his All Star Superman run. Like Superman, he's dying in this. It's like a one off comic. It's not connected to any continuity. Mm-hmm. So he's dying, and so he has to like do like seven great feats or something before he dies. And one of them is that he like needs to create a universe without Superman to see if it would be okay. Or something, and so the universe he creates in it, like the two guys who create Superman's Siegel and I think Shuster, I forget like the other guy's last name.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, whatever. The two guys that created Superman, they like emerge in this universe that Superman's witnessing from his laboratory, and it's like, you know what I mean. I love moments like that where the
self-referential, a little wink to the people who know,
right? And this is like insane meta level.
Yeah, right. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Phoenix, she's flying through outer space, and if you've ever heard me rant about Thor, any of the Thor movies that have been out...
I've heard you rant.
I know.
I barely survived. You're a fan of them, right?
I'm a big sucker for all the outer space scenes that Marvel can give me, because really beautiful.
Well, that's why I went on about the Eternity for 10 minutes because that's the most awesome stuff.
Well, the concept of it is awesome, but like the actual visuals of it are also really awesome. I mean, the movies, absolutely, with special effects, but even in the cartoon, the sequence is really, really nice where the Phoenix is blasting into outer space, and you see her passing by all the planets and encountering spaceships up there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost my rant, but...
Well, no, I mean, you're right. There's, like, something beautiful to, like, the greater, like, cosmic, like, outer regions of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and the way it's rendered is what I was getting at.
I mean, my dream, now that Disney controls Fox... is I want a Silver Surfer IMAX movie where you get some like experimental French artist to direct half of it or something, and you just see the Silver Surfer in silence for like 10 minutes like flying through nebulas and like quasars and through black holes.
That would be amazing. I would pay to see that
with,
for
like,
sure.
Yeah, with like the lights reflecting off a silvery surface, and you know, there's no sound in space. And then, like, maybe after 5 minutes of silence, he, like, you know, like, he finally says something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, like, much needed in Hollywood these days. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Star Wars last week, where it's, like, you know, the original Star Wars had moments that were kind of like that, where it's, like...
spellbinding scenes of outer space.
Exactly. Like, you're watching the two suns rise, and, like, there's no sound except for, like, the backtrack of, like, beautiful music for, like, a few minutes. And you're just, like, watching the robots toil in the sand fields or whatever. It's, like, peaceful, you know?
Right, yeah.
It gives your brain a break to not have to watch, like, crazy graphics and
You know who did a good job of that? Chris Nolan with Interstellar, which, you know, people dislike that movie. It's a controversial movie in terms of people are bored by it, or it's, like, got weird plot holes. But beyond that, the visuals are amazing.
Yeah,
he has these wide shots of, like, Saturn or Jupiter or something, or, like, the wide shot of the wormhole. Then he shows like what a black hole looks like in space with that like star that's like orbiting a black hole or something, and it's like stuff like that like would be so perfect in the Marvel universe, especially with characters like the Silver Surfer and, you know, Galactus, like whoever you have else, like Adam Warlock, I don't know, and all the different heralds of Galactus, like we could use some like epic space grandeur in our Marvel universe. And, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is supposed to be like that. But it's a bit too, like, like neon-y, like fast-paced.
Well, because part of it is like 80s throwback,
right? Yeah.
So there's that like stylistic element to it that doesn't really leave room.
You know, Thor: The Dark World, which is Thor 2, that got shit on by everyone. But I remember when me and you saw it in the theaters.
Yeah.
And we've only seen it this one time.
I know. Well, that's what I was ranting about the last time that we spoke about it.
Yeah. It had some, like, beautiful, like, outer space imagery.
Yeah.
You know, for say what you want about the plot, and it was, like, whatever, a weak movie. But, like, the special effects, I was, like, at the edge of my chair watching that movie at the time. Like, whatever year it was, 2014 or 13. I don't know.
Not that long ago.
You know, maybe 2015. Okay, whatever. Anyway. Who cares? But the point is, like, it looked, like, glorious. And there was some, like, tasteful, like, outer space imagery there.
Yeah.
And the point is, like, and we'll see with this Dark Phoenix movie that's going to come out. Like, we'll see if they can capture some of this cosmic beauty.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Dark Phoenix is another – it's a character where – the filmmakers should go for stuff like that.
Yeah.
They need to go for epic, like, outer space grandeur.
Yeah.
So, but speaking to this episode...
Anyway,
So what happens when she's in the other solar system?
Well, go ahead.
Oh, okay. You want me to say? So, I mean, she finds this other solar system. We see a Shi'ar, like, Star Trek cruiser.
Yeah.
Like, exploring some unknown region, and like, oh, this is a boring section of space. But then they see the Dark Phoenix fly by. She flies right into the heart of like a three sun system and starts feeding on it. And the commander of the Shi'ar vessel is like, let's turn around. And they do, and but they stop because they have to like witness what's going on, because Jean blows up the solar system more or less. And the guy on the ship's like, oh, luckily it wasn't inhabited, otherwise billions of creatures could have died.
Yeah.
That was lucky. This is the sanitized version for the cartoon show. Because in the comic books, Jean actually kills, like, a whole planet with, like, they say there's, like, 6 billion or something aliens living on it.
Mm.
And so she's definitely guilty of something in the comics.
Right.
They
didn't want to weigh her down with that in the TV show.
In the cartoon, yeah, they give her more, right, yeah. So in the comics, Jean commits genocide.
Right.
You know, it's not really her. It's the Dark Phoenix entity. Jean's just along for the ride. She's kind of, like, suppressed or something.
But it is dark.
Right. It's messed up. Yeah. So the Shi'ar people are alerted to this. They contact Lilandra, our old pal. She assembles the Imperial Guard because she has to take action. Now, back on Earth, the X-Men... gather at a dinner table in the X mansion, which is a nice change of pace. They're not in their command center in the basement, and they're just trying to figure out what to do with Jean. They don't really know. Cyclops doesn't want to give up. Professor X is like, yeah, we have to kill her, you know, or that's what everyone's conclusion is, but Cyclops is like, no, as long as Jean's alive, we can't give up. So they're a little unsure about what to do, but then Cyclops' head starts glowing red. And he's like, wait, Jean's back on Earth. And Storm's like, how do you know? And I'm like, Storm, can you not see Cyclops' like bright glowing red neon head?
Maybe she can't see it.
I know, but it's just funny to me. Like, it's like quite clearly something's wrong with his brain.
It's because Rogue doesn't know about love.
Not Rogue, Storm.
I mean, right. Why do I keep doing that?
I don't know.
Because Storm doesn't know about love.
I don't know why I got so
love.
Upset at you in that moment. No, Storm knows about love, I think. Love is important to Storm. She hasn't had a boyfriend yet in this show.
Yeah, that's true. How come they don't give her a love interest?
That's a good question. I don't know. I wonder if she does get a love interest. I don't remember. I'm trying to think.
We'll find out.
Oh, she does in like a weird like alternate fantasy way.
Oh.
So I won't spoil that. But yeah, Storm does find some kind of love going forward. So Jean's back on Earth, and they all have this like dumb epiphany. It's like, why, you know, if the Phoenix wants to kill us and she can kill us all in a split second, why hasn't she done it yet?
Yeah.
And then they realize that, like, oh, it's because Jean's still fighting it on the inside. And with that, Beast is like, let me create a mnemonic scrambling device, which he goes to his computer and, like, 3D prints one out somehow.
Yep.
And, what's her name tells us about this? Julia Leewald told us to look out for a little Carly... a cameo in this episode.
Oh, I didn't remember that she had said that, but I did notice it on Beast's computer screen.
Yeah.
It's got a little I Love Carly...
like, photo.
Yeah.
It says love Carly.
Oh right, yeah.
So Carly sent him a picture,
uh-huh.
And so maybe the romance between Carly and Beast have kicked into
speaking of love
on the down low.
Yeah,
a bond deeper than love, perhaps between them. No, not yet. No. Okay, well, who knows?
No, I thought that was reserved for Lilandra because she's from outer space. Or
something. Well, that's the only one who's been bragging about it. Lilandra and Professor X.
Yeah,
that they have a bond deeper than love.
I know nobody else has got that.
Well, maybe Scott and Jean.
Hmm. Maybe.
They definitely got close to a bond deeper than love, because now Jean's the Phoenix Force, and this love thing keeps, like, vexing the Phoenix.
Mm. So, do you only get a bond deeper than love if you're psychic?
I think that's definitely half the paddle. Yeah. Maybe it needs to be deeper than love if both of you are psychic, because Cyclops isn't psychic.
Uh-huh.
Though he enjoys psychic access to Jean's mind somehow.
Right, but only her.
And they do have a psychic bond.
Right. So
whether or not the bond
is
itself,
that the bond that's deeper than love.
No,
the
we can't say
bond?
It's deeper than love. It's maybe it's
in
level
addition
with love,
to love?
Right? So they've got the pneumatic scrambling device, and Jean, like, meanwhile, she heads to her childhood house somewhere. I'm going to say Jean lives in upstate New York too, near the X-Men. Maybe within
Westchester.
Driving. Yeah, maybe within driving distance.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
That could be.
Maybe she's from Connecticut.
Okay.
Anyway, she's from some, like, upper crust white suburb. So she's in her childhood home. Nobody's home except her cat, Prometheus, who sort of scowls at her. Because cats can tell if you've been possessed by a demonic force.
Of course.
But despite that, she's real happy to be home. She's sort of, like, regressed into a childlike state. She's, like, dancing around her childhood bedroom.
Checking out her childhood toys.
Right, her posters of, like, rock bands that she was into. I think the one rock band on her wall is called the Flat Bills.
Yeah.
Which seemed kind of dumb as a bad rock band name, but it's kind of funny. And then she hears a car honking in the driveway. It's, like, a station wagon. And she's like, Daddy's home!
Yeah, it's really creepy.
That was really creepy.
I forgot that this show hits notes like that sometimes. Yeah. They're, like, real creepy. And I think, like,
that's almost like a horror element.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think kids pick up on that creepiness, too.
Right.
You know?
So the X-Men have set, like, a psychological trap for Jean. You know, they're, like, really messing with her mind in some weird way. Like, somehow they've anticipated that she's going to go to her childhood home and that... Well, I guess Cyclops detected it. But they've, like, figured out how to, like, use it for their advantage.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, later in an establishing shot, they've sort of... Her family is there, but they kind of, like, hid them away. And, you know, because that's kind of interesting. So her family's, like, in with the X-Men trying to help.
Yeah.
They're in on the scheme. And so in the midst of all this confusion, like, there's some fog going on, and Gambit is the one who slips the brain scrambler on Jean's head. He's like, I'm sorry to do this, yeah, forgive me. And, you know, she's kind of in pain right away. But I thought it was funny. It's like, why is it Gambit's job to put the thing
on her?
What
do they call it? A mnemonic scrambler?
I think so, yeah.
Why is it mnemonic?
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, it's a mnemonic scrambler. So, like, Gambit's the one that slips it on. Why do you think it's his job to do that?
I don't know. He's standing closest to her.
I thought maybe it's because he's a thief.
Oh.
And he's the sneakiest. So it's like... You know, they don't, like, outright tell you that's the reason, but that's the reason that I'm gonna just say.
I don't know if they, like, thought that hard about it.
I think they did. I think there's a reason. Because, like, why else would they even give Gambit a line there?
Right. Okay.
You know, but this mnemonic scrambler is not even working that well. She's sort of laughing, and she melts it in her hand and, like, makes fun of Beast. And Wolverine's, like, had enough at this point. He's like, that's it. It's time to end this. We knew it could come to this. And he, you know, pops his claws and tackles Jean, and he's about to slice her up. And it's almost like a scene straight out of the X-Men 3 movie. Except in the cartoon, Wolverine doesn't have the heart to kill Jean. You know, in the X-Men 3 movie, he cuts Jean to death. He stabs Jean in the stomach to kill her.
Right.
In the climax.
And here he can't do it. Sorry, I just looked this up. The word mnemonic, I always think of in like a mnemonic device.
Yeah.
Right? That, like, helps you remember something. I didn't realize it's also an adjective that just means that it's something that helps your memory. So I guess a mnemonic scrambler scrambles
so
your memories.
It's almost like a pun or like a mnemonic device that Beast has made or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of funny.
Oh, that's clever. Yeah. Wow, I can't believe it took us a while to get that. Yeah. All right, now we're there.
Yeah, so Wolverine can't kill Jean. He can kill her in the movies. He can't kill her in the cartoons, which is actually more realistic. And that actually makes more sense from a character standpoint, but that's what happens when you don't have Cyclops dead in your movie like he was in X-Men 3, inexplicably.
Right.
So good on the cartoons part. But then there's like a funny moment where like the X-Men are kind of defeated again, and Dark Phoenix is crazy. But Cyclops emerges from Jean's father's station wagon dramatically to confront Jean. And I just think that's funny that he, like, symbolically was playing the role of her dad for a second.
But, again, like creepy, that's messed up. a little bit of a creepy note. But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and so he's, you know, he convinces Jean to fight the Dark Phoenix. She collapses in his arms, as she is often wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's her, like, trademark move. But then Professor X takes it upon himself to attack Jean's mind with his psychic powers. And kind of at last, we finally see the professor, like, go ham with his psychic powers.
Yeah.
He does not let up on Jean here. He transports her to, like, the mental plane or something. He's like, in the arena of the mind, I am stronger, or something. And he starts battling the Dark Phoenix, and there's, like, some great animation going on. It's reminiscent of what it was like in the Emkron Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And he even makes reference to that. He's like, I will bind you, Dark Phoenix, in Jean's minds, much like you binded the Emkron Crystal to protect the universe, or something. So that goes on, but then Jean... consciousness is still inside the Dark Phoenix. She ends up helping the professor. They join forces in psychic spirit bodies, and they like wrap the Dark Phoenix up in some kind of rock paste, some kind of pink rock paste goo.
Right.
And so it looks
so
like
secure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the professor's like biggest move when it comes to his therapy. He's always locking things away and like behind cages and walls inside people's minds,
or like busting through those cages and walls like, if they exist without his help.
Yeah.
So
we've like seen it like unsuccessfully with Sabretooth.
Yep.
We saw it like kind of with, well, I think Jean helped in this case, but we saw it with like Jean going into Rogue's mind.
Yeah.
With Captain Marvel or Miss Marvel.
It just like shows you that like they've got it wrapped up for now, but. Probably not forever.
Yeah, but you know, but it seems like a happy ending.
Yeah.
Because Jean turns back into her green outfit.
Right. So we know she's the real Jean again.
She just makes sure to like revert her clothing back to a more like friendly, you know, state.
Right.
It's bizarre. I love those touches in the comics though. That's so, like, that's something like so great for kids. The color coding's really important, you know, and does not go unnoticed by fans.
Yeah, of course. That's why we talk about clothes and outfits all the time.
But that's why I think they should be commented on more in the movies. Like, stuff like that happens in the movies, too, and in the cartoon, and nobody ever says anything about it.
Except in the first X-Men, where they make some joke about, like, should I be going around in yellow spandex?
Yeah, but, like, the joke is brought up, and then it's, like, never discussed again, their outfits on any level. Like, it's almost, the joke's almost, like, there to say, like, hey, let's never talk about this. So, but, like I said, like, you know, these costume changes happen in movies, too, and, like, no one ever says anything. So it's kind of funny, like, when it is commented upon.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so we're the ones commenting it on this case. They don't comment about it in the show.
Aren't we funny?
Yeah. And then you notice this. There's some funny moment between Cyclops and Jean where they're, like, making up or something. And Cyclops is like, I love you, Tiger.
Yeah, very Spider-Man-y. Like
that. Yeah, that's Jean.
That's Peter Parker.
Well, that's Mary Jane's nickname for Peter Parker.
Yeah, exactly.
He calls him Tiger all the time.
Yeah.
But it would make more sense for Peter to call Mary Jane Tiger because she's a redhead, too.
Right.
A lot of foxy redheads in the Marvel Universe.
I know. I was actually thinking about that. I was like, is that like a thing for Jack Kirby or what?
I think there's something like very comic book fantasy about a redhead, like a ravenous redhead in
Ravenous?
Oh, no, raven's not the right word, right? Raven colored? Raven's black, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so whatever. Redheads. Something about like redheads are like a real like fantasy like woman in comics and stuff. For some reason. So
I think because like a lot of the characters in comics are portrayed as very unique, like personality wise.
Right. Yeah.
But like that matches. You know what I mean?
It's the color coding again.
Yeah.
You know, like Mary Jane doesn't have red hair. She has like outrageously like gorgeous red hair.
Yeah. And the same with Jean.
Yeah. Like it's like that kind of stuff, you know. I mean, and like even on like other lesser characters where the hair's not that big of a deal, like Wolverine's got like black blue hair.
Right, but a very distinctive shape.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So it's
Well, it's not really blue though. That's supposed to be like the highlights.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
You don't draw like for like less contrast of highlights, they use blue instead of white, I think.
That's true, but like it's a trademark in and of itself,
right?
And noticeable, like, you know, you don't, and like, and that's a trademark in the comics in general with characters with black hair with the blue highlights.
Uh-huh.
You know, you see it with Colossus.
Yeah,
he's got like a black chrome dome head with these blue highlights, and there's a million other characters too.
Yeah.
I think like even sometimes like they'll give like a flash of blue in Superman's hair, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I might be wrong about that, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Like if you've got dark jet black hair.
Well, I mean, it's like a visual trick sometimes, though, because like the Phoenix outfit is red with like yellow accents or whatever you want to call it.
Logo on it.
But really, for the longest time, I thought it. But like the shadows are done in black.
Yeah.
But for the longest time, I actually thought that the outfit itself was black and the highlights were done in red
because
for less contrast.
Because like she's on fire all the time and the red is the glow of the fire.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It you know, you're right. It's like it's a red outfit, but I think it is open to interpretation that way because. And then we're talking about like the art of like the colorist and the shader. You
right.
Know?
Yeah.
It's like, what was their intention? Ultimately, these things, I think, end up being the color that they put in, even though, like, that's not what the color is supposed to be. It's like you're talking about. It's like it's the effect.
Yeah.
Wolverine doesn't have blue hair. It's like it's the shock of black that makes it blue. And that might be the case with a character like Psylocke, where there's no way she's got purple. It's like she's got such jet black hair that it, like, that glows purple or something. You know
well,
what
that
I mean?
The highlights wouldn't be white. They
right.
would be like another dark color that's lighter than black.
Right.
Anyway.
But she probably has purple hair, so I'd probably upset people with that. But it's like, you know what I mean? It's like
it's hard to like distinguish the difference.
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So it seems like the day is saved, and much like and this also is very similar to the comic book. Lilandra and her crew come to Earth in a massive spaceship over Jean's house, and they're like, we're gonna arrest Jean Grey and the Phoenix, and we're gonna kill them both for the good of the galaxy. The professor's like, explain yourself, Lilandra. Like, how could you? And he says that while Rogue is holding him up, like, in her arms, like a baby, which is really cute and funny. See, that's why this show is great. I mean,
how embarrassing, though. He sees the woman that he has a bond deeper than love with for the first time in who knows how long. Who knows if they're, like, keeping up a relationship through their, like, psychic bond over time and space.
What would you think?
And then he sees her again, and he's, like, being held in the arms, like...
Well, here's my question to you. Like, let's say you were a space empress, and we had a bond deeper than love.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, you know, but, like, you live on the other side of the galaxy.
Uh-huh.
But, like, so then you come to see me again... And you find me in the arms of, like, a total, like, perfect 10 bombshell woman.
Uh-huh. Well,
so I'm saying,
just to
like,
clarify, in the arms
makes
of
him kind of a badass.
Does not mean in, like, a loving embrace in
no,
this
exactly.
situation. It means, like, you're incapacitated. Like, you're not able to stand on your own. And so someone is, like, holding you up like a child, you know?
Yeah, I know.
So it's
yeah,
like,
but the person holding me up is like a perfect 10, like Southern Belle. In a skin tight outfit, you know? Like, that's how I roll. That's what Professor X is saying. Like, this is how I roll, you know?
When your wheelchair gets blown up or your hovercraft chair gets blown up.
I want like a gorgeous supermodel with a shock of white hair
that
and
can
her
fly
red
and
hair.
Is extremely strong.
Right, yeah, yeah. I want her to be lifting me around, like, you know?
Yeah, keep dreaming.
Worshipfully. Because that was in another episode too, I think, where like Rogue's blind. No, that's not quite the same. Like Rogue was blind, and Professor X has to lead her out of a burning building.
Yeah,
but she's not lifting the professor up there.
No,
but anyway, they have a
anyway, Lilandra
a connection of mobility, of shared mobility sometimes, which that's one of Rogue's top services in the X-Men. She's always giving people a hand. As we saw earlier in the episode, too.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, that's the divergence. What were you going to say? About Lilandra?
Anyway, is there on a mission. She is not there to, like, socialize with Professor X and the X-Men.
Right. And his opinion in their relationship has no bearing on her duties as an empress, which we'll see a lot in the next episode. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I thought we had a bond deeper than love. And she's like, yeah, well, I run a galaxy with, like, 10 trillion inhabitants.
Right.
So
I'm responsible for things.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't care what you have to say. I'm just going to do what I have to do.
Yeah.
And he's very surly about the whole situation.
Yeah.
As he's,
well, we'll get there.
In the comics, too. Right. Yeah. So that was the third episode of The Dark Phoenix. I think definitely the best episode thus far.
Yeah.
Like, easily.
Mm-hmm.
Animation was great. Lots of, like, great, like situations you see the X-Men in, like, that they're not normally in. A lot of, like,
power struggles where you really don't know which way it's going to go as the viewer. Well, I mean, you know the X-Men are going to win, I guess, long run, but, like... For the specific situations, they, like, keep you guessing, kind of. You get to see a lot of exhibitions of power.
Yeah, yeah, lots of levels of power, lots of awesome Marvel cameos.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling to another distant reaches of space.
Yep.
Psychological craziness going on. Just, like, an all-around, like, maybe, like, a top 10 episode.
Yeah.
You know, definitely, like I said, so far the best one of the Dark Phoenix saga. And, you know, season 3, riding high.
Yeah,
so pretty cool.
We'll see what happens next time.
As we conclude Dark Phoenix month.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting question. So, we're recording this the day before Christmas Eve on a Saturday. You know, some notes about us. We'll be going on vacation next week. Will we be back in time to have a regularly scheduled episode?
No, we better do an extra one and bank it.
Or we could be lazy and release do it on Monday when we have off, and it'll just be like a few hours later than normal.
Oh, yeah, we could do
so,
that.
So we haven't decided yet, but so if you wake up really early on a Monday and the episode's not done yet, maybe wait till Monday night. It'll be
there. Isn't that going to be New Year's Day?
Yeah.
Oh. All right, so...
Why? What do you do? No one does anything on New Year's Day.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point.
Yeah, so the episode might be a little later than you're accustomed to, but, you know, give us a break. We have to go on vacation. So that's all I have for now. I would like to say, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. It's always fun to get new Twitter followers. Follow X-Men TAS on Twitter. They're Eric and Julia Leewald. They wrote previously on X-Men. They are writers on the show. They're awesome. Join our Facebook group, the X-Men TAS podcast Facebook group. Just search it out there. We'll add you as a member. The conversation there has been, like, freaking great lately.
Yeah, all you guys out there that are contributing, you're awesome.
Yeah, Adam, Tom, I believe Bryce has been lighting it up lately. Just, like, and if I don't mention your name on... you know, on these episodes, don't take it offense to it. I'd rather not mention your name than mess it up. So, but yeah, but like awesome stuff. There's like a great conversation. I think Bryce asked the group, like, if you were going to cast an X-Men movie, what director would you use and what characters and like what actors would you use? And I thought that was really fun to like to try to cast. The fictional movie.
Yeah, and to see everybody else's thoughts on it.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
I ended up just using the entire cast from Halt and Catch Fire, the TV show that we really love that not many people know about, although it's getting trendier all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just saw an article like pop up in my Google news feed that was like, Halt and Catch Fire is the next Wire, in the sense that it's going to be the show that all your friends are bugging you to watch because it's so great and you haven't seen it.
Well, that's probably, though, because Google's creepy and already knows that you're interested in it,
yeah.
So it pulls up, digs deep into the internet to find things that are about it.
That's
like,
true.
What was the news source that put that out?
It was, like, a mainstream website, you know, it was, like, Wired or Polygon or something. Yeah. It was, like, not, like, some obscure thing.
Oh, all right.
And Halt and Catch Fire is, like, legitimately, like, amazing.
Yeah, it
so,
is.
So, like, I was just saying, like, everyone at home, like, Google Carrie Bichet. Her last name is Bishe. She would be the perfect Jean Grey in a movie. She, like, a redhead, and she's got, like, incredible acting chops and talent.
Yeah.
And I also thought Susanna Skaggs, who plays their daughter in the show, she'd be, like, a perfect Kitty Pryde. She's an amazing young actress.
Yeah.
And then I would also get roles for all the main cast members. Lee Pace. He could be Beast or something, or Magneto. Or and then Scoot McNairy, he could be Cyclops, perhaps.
Anyway, if you want to hear more scenarios, head over to the X-Men Task page.
Yeah, it's fun.
On Facebook. I really
give
it a read.
Yeah, I love all you guys. You guys, you make it a lot of fun for us. So we read all your comments and we really enjoy them. So that's all I have for this week. We are heading to the finish line of Dark Phoenix Month. Sonia, any last words?
We're also heading to the finish line of 2017.
Oh my God. Thank God.
See y'all in the new year.
That's right. We'll see you next year.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody. Happy New Year.
Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah.